Scientists have a variety of methods for tracking the ocean currents. They use satellites and temperature gauges, and sometimes they can use rubber duckies. Oceanographer Curtis Ebsmeyer tracks the debris that makes its way around the world. In 1992, 29,000 plastic ducks, frogs, and beavers went overboard. Over the years, they have ended up bobbing along from Hawaii to Alaska through the Bering Strait, Arctic waters. They've come ashore in New England and are now moving down the East Coast. Beyond the whimsy, real science is being done. But we thought we wouldn't go too far beyond the whimsy as well. So we were wondering what floats up on your shore. So Dr. Ebsmeyer joins us with the Flotsam Hour.
Morning, Steve.
Thank you for coming in and talking to us today.
It's my pleasure.
And we do want to hear what people are finding, right, on the beach. And maybe they have questions for you about where it might have come from. You've tracked other things over the years.
Well, anything that floats over the years. So I've been tracking things that float for 30 years, from icebergs to toy ducks to chunks of water to you name it. And I've got a story for you.
Well, let's start with those rubber ducks and beavers and frogs, since that story has become, at first people thought it was apocryphal. I mean, that story has become the epic journey of these creatures. So where did these creatures, these plastic creatures, where did they start?
Well, they started as oil in the ground.
Very good.
And then they were pumped out of the ground, and the oil was refined into plastic, and the plastic was shipped to China. And the yellow plastic was molded in China into little yellow ducks.
And then they went overboard in some container in the Pacific?
The company that ordered them was in Boston. And
So they finally made it home.
It is an odyssey. So the Chinese company put them in a single 40-foot container and put that on a cargo ship, and it was sent right here to Seattle. But halfway across, about the place where the Midway Island is, famous for the World War II battles, the container went overboard along with about 20 others. And the doors popped open, and out came the turtles, ducks, beavers, and frogs.
So that was the important part, that the doors popped open.
Yeah.
And how do they – so all right, so then they hit the ocean currents. And now you can – it's sort of like a little way of tracking what the ocean currents actually do across the globe.
Yeah, they fell into the Japanese warm current because the ship gets a boost from the current, and they like to ride the Great Circle from Japan to over here to Seattle. And so they fell into the water that keeps us warm here in Seattle. Excuse me. And so they got a ride too. The ship kept on going at about 25 knots. And the little critters stayed behind, and they floated about 5 to 10 miles a day.
All right, so I can and because they are these little tough plastic toys that were made to withstand the rigors of a child's bathtub, they have managed to stay afloat for all this time, or enough of them have.
This is the 11th year, and I still get toys that just washed up. I got a beaver from a little boy in Alaska, and was in fine shape.
How did this become your thing?
I went to the UW and trained there in the 60s, and then did a lot of consulting oceanography and taught a few classes. And about 1990, my mom asked me, showed me a newspaper article about all these Nike shoes washing up on the beach. And
Now where did they come from? That was off our coast, wasn't
right,
it?
Right. They were spilled overboard in 1990, a load, 5 containers of 80,000 shoes, and they started washing up. And my mom showed me the article in the PI, and she said, "Isn't this what you do?" If you're like most of us guys and gals, we sometimes have a trouble explaining to our moms exactly what we do. And she thought, "Well, I study currents, so I ought to be studying what the currents carry, and these shoes looked like something I ought to be doing." And so I said, "Well, I'll look into it." And I started calling a few beachcombers, and I've started putting pins on a map. And then I called Nike, and they gave me the location of where they were spilled. A very cooperative company, and because most of the times I get stonewalled. So I said, "Well, this is interesting. I wonder how they got from point A to point B." So I called my friend from graduate school day, Jim Ingram, and he had a computer model that tracks anything floating in the North Pacific. But I thought to myself, I'll just give Jim the point A. I won't give him point B. So he knew that, and I said, "Why don't you just fax me your answer, and we'll see how good you are." And boy, he was bang on. The first reports were, I think, Vancouver Island. And it's amazing how good, if you put all the modern weather into a computer program, how good you can track things. And so we published that article in a scientific peer-reviewed journal. And I said, well, we can learn a lot of science this way. 80,000 drifting objects is far more than any oceanographer has access to. So I thought, this is accidental science, and we can learn something.
And what have you – so far what have you learned in terms of – for example, I saw a quote by you in a related article. I was talking about the thousands of pieces of plastic that are spread around the ocean.
Well, that's one of the things you learn is that the pieces of plastic do disintegrate. So you take a shoe or a duck. Eventually, the plastic will fragment. And it'll keep fragmenting until you have dust. So if you roll the clock forward maybe 50 years, that Nike shoe that you're wearing, if it falls overboard, will turn into dust. It can't it's not biodegradable because plastic molecules are so large that there's nothing on the planet that can digest them. Hmm. So the plastic dust keeps floating.
It says something about the environment impact, doesn't it?
It says
something about what effect it's going to have on populations that swim around the dust, the plastic dust-infused ocean.
That's what I'm worried about is I don't know what happens to the dust.
The things that float on the ocean on weekday and what it tells us about what we're doing to our oceans. Curtis Ebbesmeyer is an oceanographer. He joins us to take your calls and questions. I have an email and I have a bunch of calls, but you said you've done a flotsam hour in Australia, for example, and it was amazing what people called in, and you've done this all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, your point in all this is that we don't really know what's right in front of us.
Yeah, what's floating on the ocean is virtually unknown. You take a guy like Bob Ballard, and what does he do? He tells you about shipwrecks, but fundamentally that's what's on the bottom of the ocean. And what's on the surface of the ocean is more unknown because, first of all, it's moving around. You can't go back to point X in the water. And beachcombers are the only ones that really know what's washing up, and it's not collected by any agency. You can't see it by satellites.
Huh.
So it's virtually unknown. So you think the bottom of the ocean is unknown. What's floating on the ocean is virtually unknown.
Katie's in Ballard. Start us off. Hello, Katie. Thanks for calling.
For taking my call. I have so many questions that I'll try to just pick the top couple. One of my big questions is, given that satellites and whatnot are so expensive, do you ever do controlled releases into the wild, you know, where you take 4,000 rubber duckies and label them with your name and address and say, please mail back to or give information to me at this address when you find this rubber ducky? And then my other big question is, does most of this kind of research end up, are you mostly doing it to find out things about how surface currents move, or is it mostly to find out things about how objects on the surface are shuffled around the ocean, such as finding the giant's garbage dump?
Well, those are great questions, Katie. The first one about controlled releases of ducks. I'm real sensitive about plastic in the ocean, so I don't like to. If somebody asked me to put a bottle in the ocean, I'll make sure it's not a plastic bottle, but a glass is biodegradable, plastic is not. But it turns out that somebody's already doing that for me. There's the Great American Duck Races. It's a rent-a-duck program for charity. They're down in the Southwest, and you can rent a duck for 50 cents or a dollar, and They'll send out a million ducks for a charity race down a river, and the charity will sell the duck, rent the duck for $5, and they dump them in the river, and down the river they go, and the first place winner will get $100,000, and the ducks go back to rent a duck. So, but not all the ducks are found. So around the world, there are tens of millions of ducks being released into the wild.
Really?
Yeah.
Tens of millions.
It's a big business, and it's great for charity, but not all the ducks are found. And a lot of the ducks have to have individual numbers. So as I've been doing the story of the plastic ducks going around the world, I get lots of reports of bogus ducks.
Well, they're just ducks from other places.
Ducks, not all, there's about 1,400 different species of yellow ducks that have been manufactured. And so, best I can tell, on every shore of the planet, a yellow duck is washing up somewhere, but it's not necessarily one of the 1992 spill. So I've got plenty of ducks being released. What was the other part of the question?
Well, are you studying the currents themselves or where things end up as they float? Or both, I guess.
I'm studying everything. I want to know what the surface of the ocean is really doing and where it carries things. It turns out that oceanographers really can't put much in the way of instrumentation at the sea surface. They've got to put their current meters down below the keels of ships. So that's 100 meters down, 50 meters down. Satellites can only see a half mile chunks of water. So what happens in the upper foot of water is really unknown. What lives there? Where does it go?
Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Leslie's in Port Townsend. Hello, Leslie.
Hi. I am a frequent walker on the beach between Point Hudson and Point Wilson, and a year or so ago, I ran across, in two different days, I ran across drift cards that were a drift survey from the Evans Hamilton Incorporated in Seattle, and I'm wondering if you know anything about that survey and what it would have found about the interior waters.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just retired from Evans Hamilton. I founded the company 30 years ago.
And oh, yeah?
That's a small world. And over the years, we've put out 30,000 drift cards, wooden drift cards. They're postcard-sized. They're addressed to the company. The company puts them in the water at point A and asks you as a beachcomber at point B to simply report where you found it. We use them primarily in Puget Sound to figure out where currents go for sighting sewage outfalls.
Oh, really? For sighting sewage outfalls?
Yeah, and then we did the most recent release for helping to site the Brightwater plant that's going to be built in North Seattle in the coming years.
So do you find very much stuff on that beach, Leslie, or is it rare to find stuff on that beach?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff, primarily fishermen's floats, tires. We get tires quite often. I'm surprised where they're coming from, maybe from tugs or something. And
are they the wheels? Do they have the steel wheels inside? Or?
Once I found a steel wheel inside, but generally it's inner tubes.
Because I was on Grayland about 6 months ago, and I counted 10 wheels with the steel rims in a period of 10 miles. I was finding one per mile along Grayland, and I thought to myself, somebody has lost a cargo load of wheels because they were all the same size, about 16 inches in diameter.
That's wild. And Leslie, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to mention to Leslie that a lot of stuff comes from the Pacific Ocean. And if you do you find glass balls, too?
Do you find glass balls as well, Leslie? Oh, he might have gone by then because I said thank you.
Yeah.
Why? Because so many do come from?
There's probably 100 million glass balls that were manufactured since 1911. And most of them wound up in the ocean.
100 million.
100 million. It's hard to believe. And there's still probably 10 million floating around the North Pacific. And I just got a letter from a beachcomber. She goes to Japan every year, and she beachcombs a remote island. She goes up in the brush, and she comes back with about 100 glass balls. She goes on eBay, sells them, and finances her next trip.
No.
That's true.
She's not telling us where that place is. Really? Anything else that you collect from the ocean that is valuable in that way?
Well, let's see. The most valuable thing is worth probably about $1 billion. It was, I don't know how many of your listeners actually use a sewing machine, a Singer sewing machine. Most everybody knows about Isaac Singer. Well, the last heiress to the Singer sewing machine fortune, Daisy Alexander, turned out to be highly eccentric, and she threw her last will and testament into the Thames River, England, in 1936. It washed up in 1949 in San Francisco. She said, "To whoever finds this bottle, I leave half my fortune, half my estate. The other half goes to my lawyer, Barry Cohen." Roll the clock forward to the 1990s after all the court battles because it wasn't notarized, and that the value of that estate is about $1 billion, and he did collect.
The guy who found it?
He wound up collecting hundreds of millions. So.
And the lawyer gets something, too?
I've never been able to track him down.
Let me bring Doug, who's in Brennan. Hello, Doug.
Yeah, hi. I live on Hood Canal, and I walk every day. And last summer, I found this light. It's about the size of a grapefruit, and it was hard plastic. And I didn't think much about it, but I just picked it up and brought it home, put it on the porch. And then that evening, I went outside, and it was blinking. And it turns out it's got a solar, you know, receiver on the top and an LED, and every night it comes on and blinks all night. So I think it washed off the dock somewhere.
It could be a fishing-related? A lot of fishing-related debris washes up. That's pretty interesting. So it's got a actuator on it. And
yeah. And I think it was brand new because it's got two screw mounting places and there's no thread in it or anything.
A lot of military hardware washes up.
Yeah, it could be from Banger.
Does it look like a radio sign? Those have blinking LED red lights on them.
No, this is Amber. Oh, actually, Amber. It had a website on it. I looked it up, and it's a Canadian company.
Oh, so did it go very far?
Well, I don't know where the person bought it. I mean, it's manufactured in Canada.
Well, maybe you can send me an email about it with a picture, and I can put it in the Beachcomber newsletter.
Oh, okay, good, because I downloaded the catalog, so I know what it is.
Yeah, could you send me a story, and I'll write it up. Maybe some more of them around.
Sure. It's real cool. It's one of the neatest things I've ever found.
It's it's Curtis Ebbesmeyer at MSN.com.
For your email?
Yeah.
And we'll have links at KUW.org.
But please send me that with a photograph. That's a new thing, and I'll put it in an upcoming newsletter.
Okay, great. I'll do that.
Thanks,
Doug,
a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
now,
a lot. Bye.
The Flotsam Hour with Dr. Curtis Ebbesmeyer. How's that? Mara Jane writes that, as chief mate on a freighter, I worked in Northern Europe last summer and was told that near the island of Texel, just north of the Netherlands, a duck was found just that summer in the net of a shrimp fisherman. I will try to find the article to send it to Curtis Ebbesmeyer. While kayaking around the southern island of the Queen Charlotte's, I found at least 10 running shoes, all left-hand shoes.
Oh, okay. I know that a duck washed up in Netherlands, but not that one. So if you could email me a picture, I can ID the duck for you. There's a $100 reward being posted for any turtle, duck, beaver, or frog of the 1992 spill found in the North Atlantic. Now, as far as the shoes, we had a spill of 33,000 Nike EZW white and blue shoes off Mendocino, and they were washing up to the Queen Charlotte's. If you could tell me if they were blue and whites, that's interesting. Very often when I'm walking along the beach, if a bunch of stuff has just come in, sometimes you get a whole batch of rights and a whole batch of lefts. So that's very valuable information. The ocean is very good at sorting things out. Mother Nature is very tidy.
Why would that be? It has something to do with how they were stored?
Because Nike doesn't tie the shoelaces together, so when they spill overboard, they go over one by one. And so if you throw your shoes in the bathtub and blow a fan on them, you'll notice that there's no way an upside-down shoe can face the wind the same way.
I see.
They're mirror images, so that the winds will actually separate the rights from the lefts. And it turns out that's a fundamental part of the evolution of life on the planet.
The way things were shaped, so they flowed in different directions?
Yeah, so why we have lefts and rights, why are the left hand and the right hand, is a fundamental question. But left and right in nature is virtually unexplored. Like if you take a skate, when the mother skate delivers, she has two delivery tubes. She has a left tube and a right tube. The skate eggs that come out in the left tube and the right tube are different. And you say, well, so what? Well, they float for a while, and lefts and rights will go different places. Therefore, they'll have maximal dispersion. So if you go back far enough in life in the ocean, it's an advantage to have lefts and rights in the very early stages of life development because you'll have a better chance of survival with more dispersion. So lefts and rights is very interesting, and one way we can study that is with left and right footwear.
That's great. Davis, if you make it quick, what about bodies washing up on beaches?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, David and Queen Anne. Yeah, the book And the Sea Will Tell was about that body found 6 years later on Palmyra.
I read the book,
that?
Yeah. It's a great book.
Yeah, and Bugliosi, who put Charlie Manson away, found the guy. He was the prosecuting attorney that put Manson away, but he found this guy and he's in life imprisonment in California, and his girlfriend, who helped murder this couple on Palmyra, got up scot-free, right?
I can't remember exactly who. What I was just fascinated by the forensic aspects.
So there's bodies as well floating out there.
Half the human population floats and half sink. There's sinkers and floaters. Just by human body is almost the same density as seawater. And all of you out in the audience ought to test yourself to see if you're a sinker or a floater.
Okay. I hope you'll come back. Is there a big event that comes when things really wash up on shore?
Everywhere around the world has a particular month when you get more than half of all the flotsam washing up. Along the Washington coast, it's March.
All right, so maybe you'll come back after March. Curtis Ebbesmeyer is the editor of Beachcombers Alert, among other things. He's a scientist, studies the way things float, and you can check out his website, and we'll have to do this again. That was great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.